locker, and Sam was at her drama best, waving a note in front of Enrique Infante's face.
"You spell faggot with two G's, you ignoramus."
I got right in the middle of it.
"Hey, hey, what the..." "This asshole was pasting this."
She showed me the piece of paper with the word F-A-G-O-T on it.
"On Fito's locker."
Just then, Ms. Salcido, my English teacher, joined our little group. Sam was too busy cussing out Enrique Infante to notice, yelling,
"Give me one good reason why I shouldn't kick your bigoted little ass."
"Try it, bitch." And that was it. Sam slapped him so hard he fell back stunned. I knew he was going to go for her, so I stepped between them, and I was about to pop him one right between the eyes when Ms. Salcido was all over us like chocolate icing on a cake.
"In the principal's office, right now."
Mr. Montez and Ms. Powers had shown up as reinforcements. Enrique Infante wasn't helping himself by repeating,
"I can't believe that bitch slapped me."
And it took everything I had not to hit the little shit. As we marched to the principal's office, Sam was holding tight to the evidence and was explaining to Ms. Powers that Enrique had it coming. Vito and I, well, we were keeping our mouths shut. When we all filed into Mr. Cisneros's office, he shook his head. He looked at me and Enrique and said,
"I thought you two were supposed to keep away from each other."
I don't know what got into me, but I was feeling feisty. I mean verbally feisty, not, you know, fist feisty. "Well, it didn't quite work out according to plan," I said. "A couple of weeks ago, I passed this clown in the hall and he calls me a faggot. Apparently he's fallen in love with that word." Sam jumped right in.
"And when Fito and I were walking toward his locker, this joker,"
she pointed at Enrique,
"was taping this note to Fito's locker."
She placed the evidence on Mr. Cisneros' desk.
"And on top of everything else, he can't even spell."
I could see Ms. Powers trying like hell to keep him smiling. Mr. Cisneros smiled a snarky smile at Sam.
"Well, we've been here before, haven't we?"
Then Enrique Infante chimed in.
"And she slapped me. I mean, she slapped me, like, hard."
"You deserved it," I said, "and you were about to go at her. You were about to hit a girl. And you would have if I hadn't stepped in.
You're lucky I didn't mop the floor with you, buddy. You have some class, don't you?"
Mr. Cisneros looked at the teachers.
"Which one of you was first on the crime scene?"
Miss Salcido spoke up. "I heard an argument, stepped out into the hall, just as Mr. Infante let out the B-word in reference to Ms. Diaz." Mr. Cisneros looked at me.
"Are you going to have your dad in here again?"
That's when I knew that Dad must have really gone off on him. In a good way. A very Vicente Silva kind of way. "That depends on how this goes," I said. Mr. Cisneros looked straight at Enrique.
"You've been in this office, what, 4 times this year? Apologize to Mr.—"
He looked at Fito.
"What was your name again?"
"Fito."
"Apologize to Fito here for using that word. I suppose you were trying to humiliate him in front of the entire student body?"
Enrique Infante, he was doing that sullen thing again. Mr. Cisneros was starting to get annoyed.
"I said, apologize."
"I'm sorry,"
Enrique said.
"I'm not sure Mr. Fito over here heard that."
"I'm sorry, Fito."
Enrique Infante was not happy. Not happy. I thought I could see his ears burning. Not that he was oozing sorrow. Nope.
"Now apologize to Ms. Diaz for referring to her in that manner."
"I'm sorry, Samantha."
"I didn't quite hear that," she said.
I tell you, that Sam, she had some stuff in her.
I said I was sorry.
Then Mr. Cisneros looked straight into Sam's eyes.
Now you apologize for slapping him.
Enrique Infante, I'm sorry I slapped you. She almost hid the sarcasm, but not quite. Then Mr. Cisneros did something that nearly made me want to forgive him for being such a pompous asshole. He ripped up the misspelled piece of paper with the word faggot on it. We met at my locker after the last bell.
God, I said, what a day.
Sam was grinning. That girl could do some serious grinning.
I had kind of a great day.
Yeah, you got to slap Enrique Infante.
I've been dying to do that since last year. He's a rat.
Still, you know that thing about jumping in the sewer to catch a rat?
Yeah.
I'm a work in progress, Sally.
Yep.
But you know, Sam, things could have turned out really bad. That guy could have seriously hurt you.
Good thing I was right around the corner.
Lucky you. I know, Sally. And what would you have done if he had hurt me?
Sam, I don't even want to think about that. I know what I would have done, Vito said. I would have killed that pinche rata.
Killing someone? No bueno.
When's your next session with your therapist?
Vito smiled.
Good one, Sally.
Now two people were calling me Sally.
The truth was, I would have really hurt Enrique Infante. If he'd laid just one finger on Sam, I would have really hurt him. But what if I had hurt him? What if I had?
I heard my dad's voice in my head.
Figure it out, son.
Mima. Me.
I phoned Mima every day. She always called me Hijito de mi vida, little son of my life. It didn't have the same ring to it in English. Sometimes things just don't translate. Maybe that's why there were so many misunderstandings in the world. On the other hand, if everybody spoke only one language, the world would be a pretty sad place. Not that I spoke French or Italian or Hebrew. But Spanish was holy because it was Mima's language. And my dad's language. Even though you couldn't tell. He didn't speak English with an accent like Mima. But when he spoke Spanish, it came out perfectly. That language belonged to him the way it would never belong to me or Sam. Well, at least I didn't speak Spanish like a gringo. Yeah, I had issues about that. The only thing that mattered was that my uncles and aunts always treated me as if I were theirs, as if I belonged to them. No one in my family ever made me feel adopted, whatever that feeling was. I called Mima. I heard her fading voice say, "Hello? Hi, Mima. Hi, hijito de mi vida." I recorded a part of the phone call, and Mima didn't know it. So her voice would never be extinct.
Part 6. In the distance, I can see a storm coming in. The dark clouds and the lightning on the horizon moving toward me. I wait, and I wait, and I wait for the storm. And then it comes, and the rains wash away the nightmares and the memories, and I'm not afraid.
Sam. Fierce.
Yep.
Christmas break. And I felt I needed one. We went out to a movie, Vito and Sam and I. We ate lots of popcorn, and afterward dropped by some guy's house. Vito scored us beer. One each. Well, it was Christmas break. We went to Sam's place and made sandwiches and hung out.
As we were eating our sandwiches and having our beers, Sam said, I really hate that Enrique Infante. Where do rats like that come from? I shrugged.
Families.
Fito nodded.
Fucked up families.
Right, Sam said. Exactly. And then she looked at me and said, You and me and Dad and Maggie, we are the normalest family on the planet.
Well, I said, I don't know if we're normal.
Guess not, Sam said. And you know what really pisses me off? People's attitudes. Enrique Infante going around calling people faggots. And then Charlotte Bustamante comes up to me last week and goes, Isn't it kind of creepy to live, like, with this gay guy? I mean, I'm sorry about your mom and everything, but isn't it kind of... I stopped her dead in her tracks. I went off on her like you would not believe. I pictured the whole scene. Sam, she was all about telling the story. I looked right at her and said, I know you get this a lot, but it bears repeating. You're an imbecile. And that thing about being sorry about my mom, don't go around telling people you're sorry when you don't mean it. The next time I hear you do that, I'm going to slap you, silly. I gave her one of my grins.
Really?
You'd slap her, silly.
Well, no.
But can't I just enjoy the fleeting thought?
No bueno, I said.
No bueno, she said. But I think we were both laughing to ourselves. Fito, Sam, me, texting. Fito came over while I was making breakfast. How come I'm not in on the word for the day thing? I shrugged.
I never thought about it. You're not in on the running thing either.
Screw that, he said. I'm too skinny for running. And besides, I've been running all my life.
That makes no sense, Sam said.
I got my own logic going on here, Fito said.
You sure as hell do, I said.
Want some breakfast?
You have to ask.
I fried him up a couple of eggs as Sam made him some toast. He stared at the plate in front of him.
No bacon?
Take it up with Sam. She ate it all. I sat down with a cup of coffee.
Word for the day, I said.
Que Fito, your call. He took out his iPhone and texted me and Sam. WFTD equals mothers. Sam and I read his text. Sam texted back.
Mothers. Yeah.
Me.
Yeah.
Fito. My mother's name was Elena. Actually, Maria Elena. Sam.
Sweet.
Me.
Yeah, sweet.
Sam.
Sylvia. Sylvia Ann.
Me. Sylvia Ann. Nice. Sam.
Sally? Yours?
Me. Alexandra. They called her Sandy. Sam.
Never knew that. Wow.
Fito.
Wow. Alexandra. I like.
Sam.
They had names.
Me.
Yeah. They had names.
We put down our phones. It was as if we'd learned something, but didn't quite know how to put it into words.
Let's play catch, I said.
Without Dad? Sam said.
Yeah. Without Dad.
Ashes. I was in bed, actually thinking about opening my mom's letter. I got a text from Sam. Tomorrow, Sylvia's ashes.
Me? Question mark?
Sam.
Talk to Aunt Lena.
Talk to Dad. Done deal.
Me. I'm the last to know, really?
Sam.
Relax.
Mad.
Me.
Not really.
Tell Fito?
Sam.
Going to text him now.
Me.
What feeling?
Sam.
Feeling?
It's time, Sally.
Me.
Good girl.
Sam.
Smiley face.
Night, Sally.
Me.
Night, Sammy.
Sam.
Want me to send Maggie over?
Me.
Yours for the night.
Sam.
Sweet.
I must have really been out because I felt someone pulling on my shoulder. And I kept hearing a voice telling me to wake up.
Wake up. Come on, wake up, Sally.
I thought it was a dream. But there was Sam standing in front of me, holding the urn that contained her mother's ashes.
It's time, she said.
Time?
To spread Mom's ashes.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
You need coffee.
Yeah, I need coffee.
Come on. Vito's already on his way over. So is my Aunt Lena. So is Marcos.
You asked Marcos to come?
Yep.
Look at you, I said.
I'm warming up to him.
Yeah, you are, I said.
You, Sally?
I'll get there.
You'll get there, you'll get there.
Be quiet.
You're still half asleep.
Yep.
You're still lying there.
Yep.
Get up, shithead.
'Kay, I said, but I didn't move.
I'm not leaving this room till you get your ass up, Sally.
'Kay, I'm getting up.
I sat up and put my feet on the ground. Turn around so I can put my pants on.
It's not as if I haven't seen you in your underwear.
I'm shy.
Silly boy. She turned her back to me.
Shy my ass.
I put my pants on and tapped her on her shoulder.
You can look now.
We stared at each other.
So this is the day, I said.
Yeah,
she said.
This is the day.
We drove to McKelligan Canyon. Sam and Fito and Marcos and Dad and Lena and me. We parked the two cars, paid the fee, and started up the trail toward the top of the mountain. Sam was carrying her mother's urn in her backpack.
We didn't speak.
Sam wanted us all to be silent. Sam was good at giving instructions.
No talking.
No talking was a big deal for her. I mean, Sam and silence just didn't go together. When we reached the top of the mountain, the wind was cold, but I didn't mind. It was strange and beautiful, and I felt so alive. We looked across the gorgeous vista, and it wasn't hard for me to believe in God at that moment. Who else could have made this? We could see the river and the valley and the houses on the west side of town. The houses looked small and far away, and the streets looked like rivers. You couldn't tell if a house was big and belonged to a rich person, or if it was little and belonged to a poor person. All of it was all so large and vast and miraculous. I felt so small, and I didn't mind that at all. I was small. Sam took off her backpack, looked at my dad, and then looked at Lena and nodded. Then Sam looked at me. She was shaking and biting her lip, and I knew she was being as strong as hell, and that it was costing her something. But she was willing to pay the price because she needed to do this.
I'm ready now, Sally.
I wiped the tears that were running down her face. She handed me the backpack.
Will you take the urn out for me, Sally?
Yeah, I whispered. I unzipped her backpack, gently took out the urn. I placed it in her shaking hands. She held the urn tightly. She liked this place. Her voice was trembling. She used to bring all her boyfriends here. She laughed. And then her trembling stopped. I only know that because I read through her journals. She kept journals. She didn't seem the type that was one of her things. She was quiet for what seemed a long time. Oh, I forgot. She gave me the urn, took out some paper, and handed a sheet to each of us. It was a picture of the mirror where Sylvia had written, "Just because my love isn't perfect doesn't mean I don't love you." That's how I'll always remember her. Then she took the urn from my hands, raised the lid. She slowly tipped the urn until the ashes poured out. The wind lifted Sylvia's ashes and blew them over the desert. Sam took my hand and looked at it. Then she whispered, "What would I do without this hand?"
Oh, Christmas tree, oh, Christmas tree. Sam put on some Christmas music, and she was singing along to "Oh, Christmas tree, oh, Christmas tree." Sam could do a lot of things, but she didn't know how to sing. But she was in a good space, so I didn't mind. I was lying on the couch trying to read about the Civil War. Fito was lying on the floor right in front of the Christmas tree. He was crazy over the Christmas tree. Loco. Sam was on her laptop looking at the Stanford website, dreaming her dream. "I like Christmas," I said.
"Me, not so much," Sam said.
"You and Dad always went to Mima's, and I was always stuck with Sylvia, who was usually not in a good mood. For whatever reason, she was usually without a boyfriend around Christmas, so we watched a lot of movies. But we did buy a lot of shoes. I was always happy when Christmas was over." Fito was listening to Sam. He was still staring at the lights on the tree. "That doesn't sound so bad to me. I remember one Christmas, my mom actually got a tree, and me and my brothers decorated it, and I was like this happy little kid, and I went around the house whistling. I used to love the whistle. And one night my mom was in a bad mood, or she was high, or she was, I don't know, but she was yelling and acting all crazy, which was normal. And then she went off of me and said she couldn't stand that whistling shit. And just for that," she said, "I'm getting rid of the tree." She tossed it out. Yeah, Christmas was shit in my house. But, you know, I still liked Christmas. I liked walking around and seeing all the lights. And I liked to see the mangers with Mary and Joseph and the baby Jesus. I liked all that. And there was this song I heard. And I used to sing it to myself as I walked up and down the streets looking at the lights. And Fito started singing this song I really liked. A kind of sad song. "I wonder as I wander." And the way he sang it, like he'd written it. And after he stopped singing, he smiled. "Yeah," he said, "I like Christmas." Sam and I were real quiet, and then Sam said, "Wow, Fito, you have a beautiful voice. You can really sing." "Yeah," I said. "How come you never told us you could sing?" He shrugged. "I guess no one ever asked." Sam shut her laptop. "Fito," she said, "did you know I didn't used to like you? Shame on me. Shame on me." Dirt, paper bags, candles. I've never made luminarias before.
Me neither.
I gave Fito and Sam a look. I'm kicking you out of my Mexicans only club. Have you guys ever done anything Mexican?
I've gone to Chico's Tacos.
Me too,
Which one?
The one on Alameda.
Me too.
Well, maybe I'll let you in.
Shut up, gringo.
I gave them another look, both of them.
Pochos. You're both such pochos. Totally half-baked Mexicans.
They just laughed. I taught Fito and Sam to fold the tops of the paper lunch bags. You had to be careful because if you were in too big a hurry, the bags would rip. No bueno. So they started getting the hang of folding. I grabbed a shovel and poured about 6 inches of sand into each bag. As I was doing that, I started thinking of the shovel at my grandfather's burial. And I hated that thought living in my brain. So I just shut it down by thinking of a song. I guess that was another way of whistling in the dark. We were in my Uncle Mickey's backyard. He had plenty of dirt since his dog Buddy had dug up half the lawn. There we were, the three of us making luminarias. Who the hell thought of this luminaria stuff anyway? The Spaniards of northern New Mexico. They used to put little fires on paths to light the way to midnight mass on Christmas. I think that's how it goes. They were the original streetlights. Then the fires became paper bags, just like paper lanterns. Sort of. Only they sit on the ground. Sam gifted me with one of her looks. If she hadn't been folding paper bags, she would have crossed those arms of hers.
Thank you, Professor Silva, for the little history lesson.
You don't believe me? Wikipedia it.
She stopped folding, took out her cell phone, and started her thing. She read it, then looked at me.
So, yeah, big deal. You know a few things.
I have to say, I was feeling a little cocky. I dropped the shovel and started dancing around, waving my hands in the air like a super dork. And then I started singing a tune I made up in my head.
Call me gringo now. Call me gringo now.
And Fito, he's laughing his ass off.
Vato, you just prove that you're like white, white, white. You can't dance worth a shit.
Ah, I said. Get to work. We were having fun. I wondered why one of our hobbies was giving each other a hard time. Part of the friendship thing. The heart, yeah. Sometimes I didn't get it. But if we were making each other laugh and smile, maybe it was part of the way human beings loved each other. When we finished folding and filling all the paper bags, Fito looked at our handiwork.
You and your peeps, you're up to your ass in traditions, you know that?
You want that I should apologize?
Is that your way of saying fuck you?
You're quick, Fito. You're very quick. We placed 150 luminarias all around Mima's house and put a votive candle in the center of each bag.
Ah, Vita said. The sand. I get it. That way the bags don't catch on fire.
Like I said, Vito, you're quick.
You say that one more time and I'm gonna do to you what I did to my brother at the funeral home.
I'm not sure that therapist is working out for you. Sam started laughing, and she said maybe Fito and I should take our show on the road.
Anywhere, she said, as long as it's far away from me.
Dad and Uncle Mickey and Uncle Julian lit the luminarias as the sun was setting. It was a clear night, and there was only a slight breeze. Perfect weather for a luminaria lighting. Mima was no longer walking. And my Aunt Evie and my Aunt Lulu helped her into her wheelchair and bundled her up. And they kept asking her if she was sure she wanted to go outside.
What if you get sick?
Mima gave them a look. I mean, she could still give looks.
I have cancer, she said. I am sick.
She winked at me. I wheeled her outside and we stopped at the end of the driveway so she could see the luminarias. The lanterns made everything seem so soft, as if a few candles in paper bags could tame the night. Sam and I and Fito started singing her song in Latin. We'd practiced it a bunch of times, but it was Fito who carried us along.
Adeste fideles, leti triumphantes, venite, venite.
When we finished, Mima had tears streaming down her face. I knew they were the good kind of tears. She took my hand, holding tight, as if she never wanted to let go. Now I knew why people said things like, I'll take that to the grave. I had always assumed it was a bad thing. Just then I realized that it could sometimes be a good thing. And not just a good thing, but a great thing. The luminarias lighting up the winter night. Candles in paper bags. Mima's tears. Christmas. Midnight Mass. Mima had gone to Midnight Mass every year of her life. Not this year. Not ever again. Dad told us to get dressed, so we did. Mima sat in a chair in the living room. She was awake. She was thinking. She held Aunt Evie's hand. We stood in front of her. Sam and I waved. Dad kissed her.
We're going to Mass.
Mima's face lit up, like a luminaria. Christmas. Christmas morning, and I was sitting next to Mima in the living room. My Aunt Evie and my dad had to help her into her chair, the one she liked to sit on. Dark clouds were moving in. It wasn't cold enough for snow. Rain. Rain was bad for paper bags. Rain was bad for luminarias. Mima and I were looking at my book of photographs, the one I made for her. She looked at them and smiled, and I knew she was remembering. She didn't talk much anymore. A word here, a word there. Sometimes a full sentence. She pointed to a picture of me and her and Popo. I must have been about 10. We were all dressed up. Dad's birthday, I said. She laughed at my caption. Mima is prettier than Popo. She was staring at a picture of me and Sam when we were 7. No front teeth. We were standing in the front yard. It was summer, and the leaves of her mulberry tree were behind us. The caption read, "She was always my sister."
Beautiful, she said.
I turned the page and she smiled. It was a picture of the day we built the human pyramid in my backyard, and I was at the top. The caption read, "One day, all these Mexicans built a pyramid to the sun."
"You were my pyramid," she whispered. "All of you."
Dream. I woke up in the middle of the night. I dreamed I was opening my mom's letter, and my mom was sitting next to me. She took the letter and said, "Here, Salvador, let me read it to you." What if I started remembering a mother I had no real memories of? I couldn't fall back asleep. I looked around the room and remembered that we were still at Mima's. I was sleeping on the couch. I wanted to walk into her room and tell her about my dream, but she was asleep. I didn't want to wake her. Home. 3 days after Christmas, my dad was sitting on the front porch with Mima, who was having a good day. Dad looked at the mulberry tree.
"I remember when Dad planted that tree."
"I remember, too," Mima said. "It's a beautiful tree. I've sat in the shade of this tree for many years."
Mima was like the tree. In this desert where I'd grown up, Mima had shaded me from the sun. She was a tree.
How would I live without that tree?
Sam took the wheel and drove us home. I want a car, she said.
You have to pay for cars, my dad said. Are you ready to make payments on a car?
I'm ready, she said. I believed she was.
Fito turned off his phone. He was always fooling with it.
It's almost New Year's, he said. That means we get to start over.
You believe that? I asked.
Maybe.
Maybe I just want to believe it. I want to believe it, too.
Then believe it, my dad said. What's stopping you?
I believe it, Sam said.
Let's do something great this New Year's Eve.
I'm for that, my dad said.
Me too, I said.
New Year's Eve. I was hanging out with Maggie and Dad after our morning run. Dad was looking at the cigarette he was holding.
I hate these things.
But you love them too. He laughed.
Yeah.
You said it was an uncomplicated relationship. That wasn't true, was it?
Guess not.
He lit his cigarette.
What's the plan for New Year's?
Me, Sam, and Fito were thinking of going across the border to New Mexico and getting some fireworks and shooting them off in the desert.
Oh, yeah? You got a car?
Don't be a wise-ass, Dad.
That's a sore subject with you, isn't it?
I'm the last boy in America who doesn't have a car.
Not true.
You know what I mean.
Well, I guess I've sent you straight to the therapist's couch.
What? Are you taking lessons from Sam?
You have money in the bank. You can buy a clunker if you want.
You never said that.
I never said you couldn't have a car. All I said was that I wasn't going to buy one for you.
Oh, shit! You mean I could have bought a car?
Yeah.
My dad was laughing.
Not my fault you didn't think of it.
He rubbed my hair.
Joke's on you.
I didn't have a choice. I had no one to blame but me. So I sat there laughing at myself. Then I looked at my dad. How come you didn't want to buy me a car?
I gave you everything you needed, but not everything you wanted. I didn't want you to grow up to be an entitled brat. A lot of kids, their parents get them everything. And the kids do a new kind of math. I want equals I get. As you like to say, no bueno.
He put out his cigarette.
Anyway, we have reservations at Cafe Central tonight. Marcos is treating us to a New Year's dinner.
He must be in the bucks.
He does all right. Everything he has, he came by honestly. I respect that.
Does this mean we have to dress up?
Yeah. What, you married to your jeans?
You're funny today, Dad.
I got up feisty, I guess.
Well, can Fito go?
He's included. The reservation is for 5.
That made me smile. Marcos likes Fito, doesn't he?
Yeah. Marcos had a tough childhood. I guess he sees himself in that kid.
He played with his pack of cigarettes.
Besides, we all like Fito. He's a wonderful guy. Pisses me off that his family never gave a damn.
I nudged him with my shoulder.
Dad, I think I like you a little feisty.
He nudged me back.
It's been a weird year. Beautiful. Hard. Sad. Get your fireworks. We can shoot them off after dinner.
So I told Sam that we're having dinner at Cafe Central, and she was dancing around the living room.
New dress! New dress!
Like you have all this cash lying around.
No, but you do.
Really?
I said.
Really?
What are brothers for?
Dad lent me the car, and we were off to buy a dress. For Sam. Even Fito came along, but only because we were going to buy fireworks. Sam tried on about 20 dresses. She looked great in all of them. And Fito, after Sam looked at herself in a mirror and shook her head again, Fito, he finally lost it.
Sam, you make me feel all happy and shit that I'm gay. Straight guys have to put up with this shit.
Gay guys not so much.
I was grinning and Sam was crossing her arms and giving us a look that said, guys suck. Gay or straight, guys suck.
And then Fito walked to this rack, picked out a long red gown, handed it to Sam and said, this. And he smiled. Sam took the dress, looked at the size, and walked into the dressing room. She came out, inspected herself in the mirror, turned this way, that way, then turned around and smiled at Fito.
You are gay!
We couldn't stop laughing. Just couldn't stop. Sam bought the dress. Well, I bought the dress.
But do you think she was finished there?
Nope. She picked out a shirt for me and a shirt for Fito.
Oh, yeah. And ties.
Sam, she was all about new clothes.
Dress like men, she told us.
We drove on the 10 right past the state line. New Mexico. Fireworks. When we walked into the restaurant, I thought Fito's eyes were going to pop out. He looked at me and whispered,
holy shit! People, like, they live like this?
Sam kissed him on the cheek.
I love you to pieces, Fito.
Sam was the most beautiful woman in the room. No one else even came close. At dinner, Sam was all about taking pics. The Facebook thing made me crazy. Marcos ordered a bottle of champagne. He and Dad were at ease in places like this. They were used to going out to nice places and traveling and all that. Me? I wasn't quite used to it. We toasted Mima. My dad raised his glass.
I know it's hard, he said softly. But we have to remember we'll always have her with us.
I think he was talking to me more than to anyone else. So we raised our glasses to Mima. And then I said, and to the mulberry tree Popo planted. My dad smiled at me. So we toasted that beautiful tree. We talked about everything that happened to us in the past year. Then Sam turned to Marcos and asked, what's the best thing that's happened to you this year? He smiled.
That's easy.
He pointed at my dad. Then he pointed at Fito. Then he pointed at me, and then he pointed at Sam. Sam said, you're just trying to charm me into liking you, aren't you? Marcos nodded. That's exactly what I'm doing. Sam smiled.
Well, it's working.
Of course she had to invent some kind of game. Of course she did.
Okay, she said over dessert. New Year's resolutions.
I said, I don't do resolutions. She didn't skip a beat.
That's part of your problem.
And I didn't skip a beat either.
Okay,
I resolve not to kill you this year, even when you use my razor to shave your legs.
You're such a girl about that.
Fito cracked up, and so did Marcos. Dad, not so much. He was used to us.
Seriously, New Year's resolutions.
Fito went first.
I'm going to try and stop beating up on myself.
Yeah, that idea came from the therapist. But you know, I like it.
Everyone clapped.
Sam nudged him. Just don't go overboard.
Dad said,
I'm going to quit smoking.
More applause. And of course, Sam had to add her commentary.
I'm glad you're quitting smoking, Dad. Nobody likes to kiss smokers.
She sort of shot Marcos a little grin. Marcos looked around.
I'll go next.
I'm going to start running again.
And he looked at Sam.
What? No editorial?
Sam didn't hesitate.
And you were doing so well, Marcos. You know we're still watching you.
Marcos grinned.
I noticed there was something very shy about him. I thought that was a good thing.
At least he wasn't an arrogant asshole.
Then it was Sam's turn. I've decided not to date any more boys until I get to college.
And my dad blurted out,
Whoa!
Fito was smiling his ass off.
We'll see, he said.
Yeah, we will,
Sam said.
Then it was my turn. I resolved never to use my fists again.
Sam said,
Not even to protect my honor?
Your honor doesn't need protecting, I said.
Hmm,
she said.
And?
I said. And I'm going to let anybody who wants to read my admissions essay. But I don't want to hear any editorials. That put a smile on my dad's face. Sam was all over reading my essay.
When?
When? There we were in the New Mexico desert. Fito and Marcos were setting up some fireworks, ready to bring in the new year.
Dad popped a bottle of champagne and poured a glass for everyone.
Well, a plastic cup for everyone.
So the fireworks were all ready to be fired, and we were all standing around, all dressed up with our coats on. And I was glad it wasn't that cold.
And then Marcos looked at his cell, and we started to count. Together. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Happy New Year! That was the first time I'd ever seen my dad kiss another man. I don't think I was quite prepared for that. And it wasn't like this sexy thing or anything. More like a peck. But still, they had a thing. And it was New Year's after all. Sam was smiling. No, she was beaming. She kissed me on the cheek.
Happy New Year, Sally. Let's make it count.
Then Fito kissed me on the cheek, too.
That cool?
That's cool, I said.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year? We went to see Mima on New Year's Day. She was in bed. She'd always made menudo on New Year's Day. Not this year. She was hardly eating anything anymore. I knew she was getting ready to say goodbye. Word for the day. Goodbye. A common word. A sad and common word. But the good news? She was talking again.
Pray with me, she said.
So we gathered in her room and prayed the rosary. It was like this gift. I didn't know if it was Mima who was giving us a gift or us giving her a gift. Maybe both. When we finished, she said,
I want to talk to you.
So she talked to us. All of us. One at a time. She pointed at my Uncle Mickey. We all left the room so she could talk to him. It reminded me of going to confession. You know, everybody waiting their turn. When she was done talking to my dad, he walked into the living room and said, Son, you and Sam and Fito. And Fito goes, Me? My dad nodded.
I sat down on Mima's bed and held her hand. She squeezed my hand softly. There was so little strength left in that hand. Then she placed that same hand on my cheek and said,
"Hijito de mi vida."
Sam and Fito were standing close. And my Mima said,
"Samantha, you have to take care of my Salvador. He's your brother, and you have to take care of him."
She made a fist.
"You're strong."
"I promise,"
Sam said.
"And Salvador, you have to take care of Samantha."
"I promise," I said. Then she looked at Fito.
"Vicente talked to me about you."
She motioned for him to come closer, and she took his hand.
"Life can be hard. I know how hard it can be."
And then she said,
"Déjate querer."
"Let yourself be loved." She made the sign of the cross on our foreheads. I kissed her. That was how she said goodbye to the world, to the people she loved. She was going to leave this earth the same way her mother had, with all the grace of the old world, the old dying world. Night. No one said a word on the drive home. Dad was trying to be strong for us, for me and Sam, and I was trying to be strong for him. I'd never thought about that. I knew now, and maybe a part of me had always known it, that my dad knew how to keep his pain to himself. He'd learned, maybe because he was born gay. He'd learned how to suffer things in silence. I didn't want that silence for him. The night seemed so dark. But I think I'd learned how to whistle in the dark. Maybe that was something. Thursday, 2 o'clock in the morning. We went to Mima's every day after that. Back and forth from El Paso to Las Cruces. Marcos came with us. He always drove. Mima had stopped talking. Sometimes it seemed that she had already left her body, but sometimes I thought she still recognized me. On Thursday at 2 in the morning, Dad woke me and Sam.
"Let's go," he said.
I stumbled into my clothes. As soon as we walked into Mima's house, Aunt Evie fell into my father's arms.
"She's gone."
Gone. There are a lot of things I don't remember. I think part of me went away somewhere after Mima died. But this is what I do remember. Someone came and pronounced my Mima dead. My dad and my Aunt Evie made calls and more calls. Some men from the funeral home came to take Mima away. Dad and I watched as they placed Mima's body on a stretcher. As they were wheeling her out, my dad made a motion for them to stop. He kissed her forehead and crossed himself. Then he nodded at the somber funeral men, and they placed her in the hearse. Dad and Aunt Evie and Sam and I watched them drive away. My dad turned and walked back inside. I think he was lost in those moments. Sam took my hand and whispered,
"This is killing me. I'm trying so hard."
I nodded. I couldn't talk. I walked into the house. I found my dad sitting on Mima's bed. My father was sobbing. My father. I sat next to him, and then I took him in my arms. My father. grief. I was sitting in Dad's car. Mima's house was full of people. Our family, old friends, everyone brought food. There was food everywhere. My Uncle Mickey said, "Mexicans love to eat. We eat when we're happy, and we eat when we're sad." Marcos and Fito were staying at a hotel. Dad was being very strong. He wrote her obituary for the newspaper. He wrote her eulogy. He was all about taking care of business. He greeted people, he talked to people, he comforted people. I guess my dad wasn't the kind of guy who sat around and felt sorry for himself. Me, I was just numb and lost. I tried to think of the stages that Sam talked about, but I couldn't remember what they were. I didn't want to be around anyone. I didn't want anyone to see my pain. I didn't want to see it either. I went driving. I found myself driving toward that farm Mima had taken me to once. I'd been trying to find it without knowing it. And then I reached the farm. It was winter and nothing was growing. I got out of the car and stared out into the barren fields. Barren. That's how it felt. That's how I felt. I found myself on my knees. I was wordless and lost. And I had never known anything that felt like this. This hurt in the heart. This emptiness. And I wished right then I didn't have a heart. But I knew I had one, and I couldn't wish it away. I couldn't wish away the hurt or the tears. I don't know how long I knelt there on the winter soil. But I felt myself taking a breath and let myself feel the cold air on my face. Cemetery. I found myself helping to carry Mima's casket at the cemetery. I was between my dad and Uncle Mickey. I still see the casket being lowered. I still see myself pouring a fist of dirt over her casket. I still see my Uncle Mickey sending some men away after everybody else had left. I still see my dad and my uncles taking shovels and burying their mother. I still see my dad handing me the shovel and nodding. I still see myself shoveling dirt. Shoveling dirt, shoveling dirt. I still see myself falling into Sam's and Fito's arms, crying like a little boy. But the strange thing was, I didn't feel like a boy anymore. It had been such a strange time since that first day of school. So many things had happened, and I wasn't in charge of any of them. I didn't control anything, couldn't control anything. I'd always thought that adults had control. But being an adult had nothing to do with control. I wasn't an adult. I wasn't a man. But I wasn't a boy anymore. Me. Alone. Not. After the funeral, there was a reception. Lots of people. People, people, people. If I heard one more very nice person say, "This is your son, Vicente? God, he's handsome," I was going to fucking scream. I was sitting in Dad's car again, alone. Everybody was inside, and I thought maybe I'd pick up smoking. Then I heard a sound, and looked up and saw Sam and Fito knocking on the window.
"Get out of the car! We have you surrounded!"
I got out of the car. Very funny.
"Word for the day," Sam said. "Isolating."
"Guess so," I said.
Let's sneak some beers.